Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. Jason Spray, MTSU's head strength and conditioning coach for football and men's basketball, is the winner of the 2012 Assistant Strength Coach of the Year Award from the National Strength and Conditioning Association. We'll talk about how Jason does his job helping the Blue Raiders train for their respective sports, what works and what doesn't work when it comes to techniques, equipment, and diet, and maybe do a little anti-steroids proselytizing too. We'll talk with Jason following a few words from MTSUnews.com.
A few of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. A $6,700 grant from the Tennessee Historical Records Advisory Board is helping the Center for Popular Music produce My Homeland, a research guide to songs about Tennessee, over the next 4 months. The project will identify and preserve a unique collection of songs about Tennessee held in the center's archives and make them accessible online. Two MTSU athletic programs again are in elite company after earning public recognition awards from the NCAA for student-athlete academic progress. MTSU Blue Raider football and men's golf were recognized June 14th with the awards, which are based on the team's most recent multi-year academic progress rates. And Dr. Ron Ferrara, a 26-year member of the MTSU aerospace faculty, has been appointed interim department chair. For more news about MTSU anytime, go to MTSUnews.com.
Jason, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
What does this award mean to you?
It means a lot. It was voted on by my peers and, you know, the National Strength Coaches Association. You know, it's highly thought of. It's been around since the 70s. It was, you know, it came about by Boyd Epley, who's a longtime legendary strength coach from Nebraska, who's one of the pioneers in the field. And you know, for him to call me and tell me that I won this award and knowing that I was voted on by my peers, it meant a lot.
How did they determine the winner? Do you know?
You know, they came up with a number of names in a pool. They sent the names around. Like I said, peers, you know, even myself voted on names. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, I received a call saying that I was in the top five. Then I received a call saying I was in the top three, and then I received a phone call letting me know I won. So that all that happened over about a year time.
In your profession, do you stay in contact with your peers? Are you pretty familiar with them, friendly with them on a regular basis through email or Skype or whatever?
Yes, we are. You know, you try to, you know, we all have our friends. You know, some of us have worked together and moved on to other schools and whatnot. And that's when it's really cool because then, you know, you'll really give each other the ins and outs of your programs, you know, especially if you're not playing each other. But, you know, you'll help each other out and find, you know, that way you can learn some things. And but, you know, every year we go to our national conference or two and you try to meet each other and, you know, you'll talk shop a little bit. And it's always nice to hear what others are doing.
But if you're working for a school that's in the same conference as the school your friend is working in, you're a little circumspect about what you say and what you don't.
I have things that I may or may not share and vice versa, yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk first about how you do your job. Men's basketball first, and on the basis of the team's performance in the NIT, you do it very well. What sorts of routines do you put them through during the regular season, and how often and why?
With those guys, we would train total body. They would, you know, we'd bring them in twice a week in season, sometimes three, sometimes one. The goal's two. You know, with travel sometimes, especially when they take the West Coast swing, you know, they'll, you know, hit that Lafayette, Denver, North Texas swing. You know, whenever the schedule hits like that, we may not be able to get in. I mean, just unfortunately, just due to their travel, you know, a lot of times we can get one in that period. Sometimes they'll train at the hotels, you know, if there's a layover. But most of the time we try to get in twice a week. You know, we try to focus on some weak points that they have. You know, with basketball players, they wear the high top shoes, the ankle braces year round. So a lot of times they lose, you know, things like ankle mobility. So we try to make sure we get that back in when we see them and just work on just trying to keep the weight on them, because those guys are usually natural, frail, lanky guys. So, you know, they burn a lot of calories at rest. So we try to make sure we just, you know, get a little work in and try to train total body twice a week.
How do you get them working on their vertical jump?
Well, first, you know, especially with those young guys, They've never trained, and you usually can see a big spike in vertical jump by just getting stronger. I mean, it's that simple. It's not magic or anything like that. And, you know, once guys, they kind of get out of that newbie stage, you know, and they develop a, you know, an adequate level of strength, then, you know, the techniques and things like that come into play. But just, you know, typically when new guys come into the program, just as they get stronger, they will jump better.
And you alluded to the geography of the Sun Belt Conference, which is a little weird. Does jet lag throw off the guy's rhythm when it comes to their...
Yes, it does.
Yeah, their biological rhythm when they're trying to train?
Yes, it does, especially, like I said, when they hit that true West Coast swing, when they actually have to go to Denver. You know, the altitude's a problem there. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the guys do have problems breathing, cramping, that kind of thing. But, you know, usually when they come back from that, you know, the time change, you know, the flights are a little bit longer. The guys do, they are a little sluggish. And what we try to do, we try to get them into the weight room as quickly as we can, just to try to get their legs back into underneath them, so...
I've heard it said that you have to mix up the routines to confuse the muscles because you get more out of them than you do just by doing the same thing every workout and just increasing the reps. Is that true?
Yes, but I think it's more mental in that aspect. You know, if you do the same thing every day, the same reps every day, the guys will get bored. I mean, they're, you know, 18 to 20 years old. You know, they're not professional weightlifters, bodybuilders, Olympic weight, you know, powerlifters, things of that nature. You know, they don't enjoy the weight room per se as much as like I do. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to go in, just kind of punch the clock and lift. They're not that way. So, you know, you have to change up things, one, mentally for them guys, just to keep them intrigued in the program. But two, like you said, you will become stale in the program if you don't change things up.
The mentality of a basketball player in the weight room, I would imagine, would be much different from that of a football player in the weight room, where brute force or brute strength would be more important, especially on the line of scrimmage, than agility and quickness.
Well, you know, really, the thing was with basketball players, you know, they come in, they really have no training age. They've never really trained before. Just because a lot of high schools, you know, they think if you weight train, the guys will get bulky, you know, they'll ruin their shot and that kind of things. And those things aren't true. So, you know, usually once we get the guys to believe in what we're doing, and you just, you know, we just teach them, and once they get a groove of what's going on, there's really not much difference there once you get the learning curve over. With football, those guys, they've been lifting. They've been a part of weightlifting clubs. Mm-hmm. You know, especially a lot of the guys from Georgia. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of weightlifting clubs and powerlifting clubs and that kind of thing. So those guys usually have a really good training age. But, like, as far as the agility goes, the offensive lineman, there's a lot of agility required to play that position.
Right. I didn't mean to imply that you didn't need agility, mm-hmm. especially the way the tight end position has changed in football. That's, you know, right. You really, the tight end has gone from, you know, a block of wood, basically, to one of your most prized receivers.
Yes, because those guys, oh, I mean, they don't, you know, they don't grow on trees.
Right.
You know, they're big, tall, athletic guys that can catch. You know, like you said, right. You know, traditionally the tight end used to be, you know, almost like a glorified lineman, you know.
Right.
But now they're much more than that. They're, you know, as big and as strong as a lineman, but they're so much more agile, and they just really, you know, they cause problems for the defense.
Yeah, and that's the way the position has, like, evolved over the last 40 or 50 years, to where mm-hmm. they're now better than ever. Do you find with both the basketball players and the football players that to a certain extent you have to uncoach or re-coach because they have been told certain things that don't necessarily fit into your concept of what a training regimen should be?
Yeah, you know, especially with, you know, more so like we're saying on the football side. You know, they've been taught things, you know, from their coach because their coach told them to do it. And, you know, some things just, they're just not right, you know, and that's expected. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, when a player moves up, you know, he's willing to make that change, and he'll listen to you, and especially once he sees, you know, his performance start to improve. Yeah, with basketball, like I said, they really don't know their way around the weight room much more than some push-ups and some curls, you know. So whatever you show them, they're pretty open for it.
And how do you vary your approach to basketball training during the postseason when you're going into tournament time?
Well, that's big. Recovery is the huge part, you know, especially when we was in the NIT, just because the number of games back-to-back, you know, we want to make sure those guys are recovered. You know, you really try to preach nutrition, drink their water, make sure they're eating. You know, we foam roll, stretch. You know, it really turns more from a strength standpoint into a recovery and really a branch from the training room. So
we'll talk about football when we come back. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Middle Tennessee State University Women's Studies Research Series features compelling monthly talks on gender-related topics by faculty and graduate students. The series offers a chance to learn about research in progress and to chat with faculty in an informal setting. All lectures are free and open to the public and are held on the MTSU campus. This is Associate Professor of Journalism, Dr. Jane Marcellus.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Jason Spray, the head strength and conditioning coach for football and men's basketball at MTSU. Now talk about the routines, if you would, Jason, that you put your football players through during the regular season.
All right, well, in season, we'll try to have we'll have three different groups. You know, we'll have the guys who have been redshirted, you know, not playing. All they do is practice. We'll have those guys. Those guys will lift 4 days a week. Then we'll have the guys who, you know, play some special teams, not too many snaps on either side of the ball. We'll have those guys lift 3 days a week. And then the guys who get the heavy snaps and play a lot, you know, like you're starting running backs and that kind of thing, they'll lift twice a week.
And you vary that during the preparation for a bowl. How? I mean, this question has been asked numerous times, but some teams have 4 weeks between the end of their season and a bowl, and some teams have relatively little time to prepare, depending upon, you know, which bowl they're getting into, whether they're getting into the one of the big BCS bowls or one of the relatively minor bowls. Do you want that time in between the end of the regular season and the bowl time to be more intense or less intense? Is it more about, you know, relax and make sure that you're in the groove, or is it push physically?
I think you have to be smart with it, but no, you want to try to set the tone, and that's what the weight room in college athletics is, the tone setter. You know, you want to get those guys in there, you want to get them working, because the great thing about going to bowls is your guys are here working, and that builds over their career. You know, you think about it. If you go to a bowl 4 years in a row, look at the months you've compiled over your career now with more training, more practice time compared to teams who do not go to bowls. In 2009, when we went to New Orleans, like you were talking about, we had a quick turnover. We only had 2 weeks to really kind of train, prepare, and get ready for the game. When we went to the GoDaddy Bowl in 2010, we had all the way, I believe, until like January the 6th. So we had a long layover, and that gave us a longer training period. So, you know, you have to be smart with it. But, no, you definitely want to get in there and try to set the tone, but again, you don't want to take a chance on injuring one of your players.
Right. How do you keep them focused psychologically if there's a long time between the end of the regular season and the bowl?
That's where the strength coach and the coaches have to wear many hats. You know, you're not just only a coach, but sometimes you have to be the psychiatrist, you have to be the motivator, you know, and you just have to get them in there and find ways to get those guys motivated. And one thing we try to do is just, you know, you may try to find newspaper clippings and that kind of thing and say, hey, these guys aren't respecting you, nobody believes in us. And, you know, you have to try to feed that to the guys and get them to work off that.
Is your approach with football players position specific? In other words, different routines tailored for offensive and defensive linemen than for wide receivers, safeties, etc.?
When we get this winter, we actually kind of trained everybody the same. It's just we had a lot of things that we had to catch up on, okay? So I wanted all the guys, my thoughts were this winter was I wanted all the guys to get to know each other. I wanted the quarterbacks to kind of work with the D linemen. Now, I'm not asking the quarterback to lift the same amount of weight as the D linemen, but I wanted those guys to see each other work, see each other sweat. You know, I wanted them to get to know each other a little bit more. But as we get into the summer, there will be some differences. But one thing that people don't realize is strength is strength, power is power, speed is speed. All the guys want it. You ask every guy, they want to get faster. And really the bigger thing is just energy system demand, and that's where the conditioning needs to be a little bit different, and some of the speed work needs to be different. An offensive lineman, you know, he doesn't need to work on 80-yard sprints, maybe where a wide receiver does.
All right.
And that's where we'll try to change up some of the things.
So the differences are more in the drills on the field as opposed to what they do in the weight room?
The bigger of the changes will be, yes.
Okay.
Because, you know, inside the weight room, you know, they're all going to bench. They're all going to do some sort of squat. They're all going to do chin-ups, you know, that kind of thing. So the weight room is pretty general. On the field, gets a little bit more specific.
With as many chances as college students have to eat junk food, how do you keep them focused on good nutrition?
Well, you try to preach. We can't be with them 24 hours a day. That's the hard part. You know, all we can try to do is educate while you're there. We try to give them supplements that are, you know, all of our supplements are guidelined through the NSCA. So, you know, we try to make sure, you know,
Okay.
So we make sure we try to, you know, we give them all the supplements that we can give them. You know, we try to educate them on it. But again, when a guy goes home, you know, there's only so much we can do.
Okay. So he's when he goes home, he's going to eat mama's of fried chicken.
A lot of times, yes.
Mashed potatoes and...
Yes. Now, we have weekly weigh-ins and that kind of thing. You know, you try to hold guys accountable, but, you know, when guys go home, they're by themselves, you know, there's not much you can do about it.
Is he necessarily going to be more conscientious about it because he's an athlete, or is he as prone to temptation as any other college student?
I would imagine he's just as prone as anybody else. But, you know, the good thing about our sport is, with football, a lot of these guys need to gain weight. They burn a lot of calories, so they can get away with it right now, and it'll be okay.
What kind of supplements are good and healthy, and what kind of supplements are either harmful or ineffective?
Well, with our athletes, we ask them to take the supplements that we give them. Like I said, you know, they meet the guidelines, you know, by the NC2A. We use Muscle Milk by CytoSport. It's pretty much like a chocolate milk, you know. It has the ratio that they look for in proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. You know, we just ask them, if they go buy anything on their own, please bring it in. Let us look at it before you consume it, you know, and that's what we try to go with. You know, we also encourage those guys not to take the supplements that are high in caffeine and that kind of things, because in the summertime, we're going to be out there running. Your heart rate's going to be elevated. It's 100-something degrees out there. We don't need you taking an artificial stimulant.
Are the supplements that you provide or recommend available only through companies that deal with athletic teams at the collegiate level, or are they available over the counter to the average citizen?
They're available to everybody. Muscle Milk, for example, you know, they have their GNC, you know, if you go to grocery stores, you know, you'll see their Muscle Milk. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more high in protein, a little less in carbs and whatnot, compared to their collegiate brand. And while the collegiate brand, all it is, they've just tried to level the market for everyone. Mm-hmm. And that way everyone takes the same supplement. That way everybody's on a level playing field.
We'll talk about the supplements that are neither legal nor helpful in a minute. This is MTSU on the Record.
Women in Science and Engineering, or WISE, helps college women prepare for and become involved in science-related careers. WISE nurtures women's interest in these fascinating and critical fields and provides mentoring and networking opportunities. The group's main goal is to assure women of their importance in all scientific and technical fields and to promote equal opportunity and treatment of women in science. I'm Dr. Judith Iriarte-Gross, WISE Advisor.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Jason Spray, the head strength and conditioning coach for football and men's basketball at MTSU. The prevalence of steroids at the high school level, the college level, the pro level, it's all been widely documented. I can pretty well guess what you're going to say about performance-enhancing substances, but give us a primer, if you would, on the telltale signs you would look for if, like, God forbid, one of your athletes started juicing up.
Well, one of the quick things you're going to see is usually strength will be the first thing you notice it goes up. Then you'll start to notice weight gains. You know, I know in the past, you know, I've heard of, you know, guys, you know, gaining 30 pounds in just as little as, you know, just a couple weeks. I mean, usually it's pretty noticeable. So, yeah, you know, sometimes you'll see acne and that kind of thing. But usually the first couple things you'll notice is an increase in strength first, and then the quick increase in size.
I understand it also adversely affects the libido, although you wouldn't necessarily know about that personally.
No, I wouldn't know about that. But it will.
But there is a difference in muscle tone. The muscle tone is, it appears to be, from natural athlete to juiced up athlete, almost appears to be analogous to plastic surgery when someone has had this artificial circumference to their biceps or their hamstrings or their quadriceps. It seems to be noticeable even to the naked eye to someone who's not an expert.
Yeah, I mean, well, typically you'll notice too is just the sheer size of the guy who's on that product and his weight. I mean, you know, if you see a guy who's 200 and, you know, 85, 90 pounds, and I mean, he has 5% body fat, that's just not common. I mean, you know, you take your average good-looking defensive lineman in the NFL, and if he walks around with no shirt on, I mean, he's an impressive-looking specimen, right? Mm-hmm. But you take a roided-out guy at your local bodybuilding club, he may weigh the same amount as that guy, but, I mean, he's just shredded. The skin is usually paper thin, and they also usually have a reddish color to their skin as well.
Isn't the rapidness with which someone achieves a heightened muscle tone also a sign relatively small amount of time it takes them to go from the kind of musculature they did have to these big bulging muscles?
Yes, and especially like we were talking earlier with basketball, you know, you can usually get some quick gains with new guys when they come into a weight program. They never lifted before, you know, and they're eating right for the first time. But, you know, a lot of times you'll see that, especially in one of your older guys. If it's an older guy and he throws on 30 pounds, that's a red flag. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, this guy's been lifting now for a couple years. You know, he's been eating regularly for a couple years. And when you see that kind of thing, that is a red flag.
Is the anti-steroid message making a dent in the problem, or do you think it's still not getting through to some people?
I think it is. I mean, because, you know, if you get caught, you know, the NC2A is going to you're going to have to set one calendar year from the day you're caught. You know, and if you're, you know, if it's in your senior year or whatnot, then you're finished. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. So, you know, and I think, you know, more people are becoming a little more educated about it. Now, of course, when you get into your bodybuilding, you know, that into your bodybuilding clubs and whatnot, that's a totally different animal. But I mean, I think with what the NFL has been doing with their drug testing policies, Major League Baseball, the NBA, I think it is making, you know, for younger guys, just letting them know that there's no way to get around this.
And with regard to NCAA Division I level, what is the policy with regard to random drug tests and that sort of thing?
Typically what will happen is the NC2A will call the head athletic trainer, and they will just push a number. Random numbers will pop up. Each player has been assigned a number. So, you know, just say me and you were in there, I could be 98, you could be 24. Mm-hmm. And it's through all of your athletes in the whole program. And they just hit the random select button. They'll just say 25 numbers pop up. They pull out those numbers, they get the names, they pull you in, they test you. If you become positive, then you have to set out one calendar year.
We'll talk about equipment when we come back. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Middle East Center at MTSU seeks to promote greater understanding of the politics, history, and culture of this vitally important region of the world. Its mission includes the promotion of outreach programs and faculty research. The center sponsors lectures by Middle East experts and scholarly exchanges. We're especially pleased to offer a new interdisciplinary minor in Middle East Studies with courses in Arabic and Hebrew. This is Dr. Alan Hibbard, Center Director.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Jason Spray is our guest. He's the head strength and conditioning coach for MTSU football and men's basketball. The public is pilloried with all kinds of advertisements about this and that other piece of equipment that is going to help you lose weight and develop six-pack abs in no time at all. If you go into a gym, a commercial gym, are you going to see equipment that is similar or in any way different from what an NCAA Division I collegiate athlete would have at the university locker room?
You know, it depends on whoever the strength coach is at that university, that may kind of dictate what equipment you're going to see. But for the most part, it's going to look totally different. When you go into a collegiate setting, you're not going to see pec decks and, you know, calf machines and forearm machines. You know, the health clubs are geared around people like bodybuilding per se. So it's geared around muscle isolation. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll have five or six different machines for your biceps, you know, and because the guy that wants to go in there, he just wants to do biceps. Mm-hmm. So that gives him five or six different options. You know, our weight rooms are more geared around free weights, you know, barbells, dumbbells, you know, body weight, you know, apparatus, you know, TRXs, that kind of thing, medicine balls, sleds, just because that's more sport specific than sitting on a machine, you know, and spending 20 minutes doing your forearms.
For the average citizen, though, who wants to be able to just exercise in his or her own home, how do you separate the wheat from the chaff when you see all of these TV commercials that make promises that your body probably can't keep?
Well, it's like you said, you know, there's no magic pill. If it sounds too good, probably is. The biggest thing is, it's a very simple thing. When I was in high school, coming out of high school my senior year, I lost 100 pounds in 1 year. All right, it wasn't using the ab dolly or the, you know, the triple bicep 1000 or anything like that. I mean, it was just me burning more calories than I was consuming and just getting out and moving around. I mean, it's really that simple. You know, if you can't afford a gym membership or if you just want to work out at home, you know, just body weight exercises that you could easily Google will work just fine. And just get outside and move around, walk your dog, get out and play with your kids, you know, and just eat less. I mean, it's really that simple.
Do you have a hard time keeping your athletes on track during the off season and making sure that they don't slip out of a training regimen of some kind, or that their diet doesn't balloon.
If you really want to get better, you can't just go home for 49 days and do nothing. You have to be active. And what we do, we just send home, you know, something simple for them to follow, but it'll keep them on track until they come back.
Do some of your athletes go through summer session?
Yes. All of our football players will be back, and I would say probably 80% of the basketball team will be back in June. And then in July, you'll have all of the new incoming players with football, so all your new freshman signees and JUCOs, they'll be back in, mm-hmm. as well as basketball, they'll all be here. So in the month of June, we're pretty busy. In July, you'll have every athlete that we have pretty much here.
How far do you get into their heads with regard to time management, making sure that they make time for football, make time for classes, how they keep it all in balance so that they don't get stressed out?
Well, you know, you should have talked to them. I mean, they're kids. I mean, they're 18 to 20 years old. You know, if they're late for something or miss something, that, I'm going to call it an excuse, will be the first thing that they use is, oh, I had this, oh, I had that. But in reality, I'm not that far removed from being in their shoes. I actually graduated from the school. I walked the same halls, went to the same classes. I understand what they're going through. And I know that if you just will get up in the morning, have a plan, go where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there, you can be where you need to be.
What made you want to get into this business?
You know, in high school, like I said, I was 300 pounds, so I wasn't, you know, the most in love with this field. But when I lost the weight, in college, I gravitated toward the weight room. It was always fun. I loved the strength coaches that I had. You know, I had a great opportunity to play and learn from two good strength coaches in Rob Rogers and Matt Riley. Matt Riley still works here. I just enjoyed those guys. I always found myself hanging out with those guys, asking questions. And when my, you know, playing career was done, they asked me, you know, like I said, I did everything they ever asked me to do. I enjoyed it. They asked me if I wanted to be a GA, and I accepted, and I just have looked back since.
Has working out for someone who wants to be a team athlete changed much since the time you were in high school?
You know what? When I played in college, I was lucky. I played for a strength coach who was cutting edge, and he was probably 15 years ahead of his time. Mm-hmm. Because of the things that he was doing and teaching us, people are just now talking about. Right. So I have to say no. Now, high school is pretty much your basic high school strength program. It's how much can you bench, how much can you squat, get up under there, boy, you know, that kind uh-huh. of thing. But as far as college goes, I mean, he was 15 years ahead of his time, and I'm forever grateful for everything he ever taught me.
Jason Spray, congratulations on your award, and good luck with the football team this coming season and the men's basketball team next season.
I appreciate it, and I just want to make sure everybody, you know, come out and support us August 30th when we take on McNeese State.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.